Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Team Broadcasting.
Again, Cafe Mahogany. Once again, we're here for Freestyle Wednesday with Took and Tiki. Yeah.
I am.
How are you?
I am wonderful.
Great.
How are you?
I am absolutely fantastic.
Good. Welcome.
Welcome. Yes, I was going to try to let that music play a little bit longer. I know how much you love it so much.
Yeah, keep that in mind on those commercials with Prince, man. don't sit around waiting for me to bring you out. I'll be over here singing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm definitely going to keep that in mind. So, you know what, tonight, before we get started, as usual, we're going to start out with something light, but I don't know if this is light or if it's deep, but do you think that my Celtics injured Kevin Love on purpose?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Listen, my baby daddy is no longer in Boston. Everything left in Boston is suspect. Well, you know what? Let me say this. Let me be absolutely biased.
Okay.
There's a young man that is the point guard named Isaiah Thomas, but
right.
Because he was named after my Zeke and
right.
He can ball, I'm kind of a
right.
fan. I'm a slick fan. Yeah, I like dude. I like dude.
Okay.
He has game. I like him.
He has game.
And
he has game.
Yeah, he has game, you know. But everybody else in Boston is you know, suspect. And they can ball. That's a young team.
Right.
They are comers. Yes, that team that they've tried to assemble there, they're little ballers. I'm like, they're young and healthy and swift. They remind me of what we see in March Madness, you know, the quickness, the fast pace. They, you know, look like a bunch of college students, you know, and they're not far from it. So, yeah, that's a little crew. That Boston has put together. But make no mistake, you know, they did some dirt to old Kevin.
Yeah, I don't think, how do you go out intentionally to dislocate somebody's shoulder? I just think Kevin Love is not one of them, you know, in the trenches sort of players, and he got mixed up in the big boys game, and he got hurt.
Well, you know, I want Kevin Love to go take a page out of the book of Bill Laimbeer.
Uh-huh.
That was like my favorite white boy in all of basketball at the time.
Yeah.
You know, Bill Laimbeer had to be the most hated center in the NBA at one time. And
I
loved him. Yeah,
yeah,
I adored Bill Laimbeer. He was my bad boy. He was the bad boy for me. I loved Bill Laimbeer. He was like, that's my guy.
Yeah, I just, for once, I'm in love with a coach of one of my teams, and I think that Brad Stevens is something special.
Yeah, he's not.
Okay.
I'm a little envious. You know, my Pistons aren't doing what I need them to do, so I'm a little warm about the situation.
Yeah.
I'll get over it.
I'm just like, I think we did a major blow in our bid for Kevin Love in the offseason. Definitely going to leave them Cavaliers. And he really liked his trip to Boston on the visit last year. But I think Kelly Olynyk kind of did us in. I don't think they could be teammates now.
Well, looking at what Boston has now, looking at what they have on the roster now, I don't think Kevin Love would have been a good fit.
Mm.
I don't see him in that particular mix, and I could be wrong. You know, what do I know? I'm just a girl.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, you're probably the most educated girl I've ever met. But, you know, with that said, I mean, Boston is just thirsty for a star. We need a high-profile player to go along with, you know, all those hustle. We got a whole bunch of appetizers out there. We just need a couple of main courses and we'll be all right.
Yeah. Well, let's not waste so much of showtime on little Boston and Miami Dolphins and, you know, stuff that just don't matter to people.
Don't matter.
Kidding.
Okay, well, let me bring up something else that don't matter. Who them 49ers going to take in the draft?
They need that receiver out of Alabama.
Well, that's not going to happen.
I took time and went on the 49ers site
right.
A couple of days ago, and I took time and I just, like, browsed through the entire roster. And I looked at the schedule, you know, for the season coming up, and I'm just, yeah, the football gods are still pissed off at me. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
so, you know, by this time of year, you would have seen something from me, you know, posting in social media saying, "Dear God, you know,
right.
Send me football season in a hurry."
Yeah,
right. we're not speaking about football these days. Mm-mm. Nope.
I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. I think you guys are going to have a surprisingly good season.
I'm trying not to be hopeful in that direction. I don't want us to be the new Cowboys. You know how the new Cowboys have just stunk up the place? You know, just average, just mediocre for no reason. You know,
no reason.
I don't want that. Just mediocre. I don't want that to be us. So.
Wow. Well, we are here on Freestyle Wednesday.
We are.
Yes.
We are.
And we welcome our callers, our listeners. To call in the Cafe Mahogany and share with us anything that's on your mind and give us your comments and deep-rooted opinions about what it is that we're talking about.
Whatever that happens to be.
Whatever that may be, as we learned last week, from politics to prince.
From politics to, you know, I will go there again, so don't get lost.
Yeah, I got a feeling you can talk about Prince at any time.
But you know what? Last week was so good. I needed a cigarette afterwards. I was like,
right. That
was good. Was that good for you? I think it was good for you, too. I kind of got that feeling, but it was real good for me. I was like, I like it. I needed a cigarette, and I don't smoke.
That's wow. You know, that's interesting. That was like the feedback that I got a lot from last week's show was, I don't know if people needed a cigarette, and I'm not really sure what that means. I'll take the naive role, but they enjoyed the show a whole lot, and I enjoyed the show as well. I enjoyed doing the show. And I got a deep feeling this week's show is about to be that and some.
Right. Because I've spent this week pissed off about everything. I've been pissed off at the president. I've been pissed off. And, you know, when I'm pissed off, it's like no holds barred. I don't have a filter like when stuff pissed me off. And some stuff I say and think I have to go and pray about later because I was like, okay, there was a line. You crossed it. And I'm like, God, did you hear it? I hope you didn't hear it. I want to take it back. But, you know, it's too late. It's out there then. So, but, yeah. So this week, I've had some real I need to talk to God moments, because even in my thoughts, I've gone too far. So you know, if you've gone too far in your mind, then you've gone too far.
Well, before you start praying, we're going to try to capture some of them unfiltered opinions that you have on what's happened this week. And when we come back from the break, we're going to jump right into it and get real deep and see if we can resurrect and capture some of those deep-rooted feelings that Tiki has and those opinions. And I'll try to jump in when I can. We'll be right back after this.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, Tiki and Cook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
Are you a business owner looking to expand your business nationally? Well, join the hottest internet radio network, Team Broadcasting. Advertise your business or organization on this program or others. Choose from a winning lineup. Selma Toro's Baseball, Toro Talk, Bridging the Gap, The Lonely Hearts Cafe, and Cafe Mahogany. We look forward to partnering with your business to help you grow, whether it's locally, regionally, or nationally. Contact us for more information, 334-505-1940, or send us an email at yourteambroadcasting.com, 334-505-1940, or yourteambroadcasting.com. We look forward to partnering with you.
Back here on Cafe Mahogany, where we talk about what we don't talk about. You're here with Tiki and Pook. And Tiki, I'm just going to put out one word, and I'm going to step back because I got a feeling we're going to talk a lot about what we usually don't talk about. So I think the key word is uprising.
Oh, yeah, uprising. That's what's happening in Baltimore right now, because you know I am all over. I am all done. I am all through with the word riot, right? Unrest.
Right.
I have no more use for unrest.
Unrest, wow.
So Baltimore uprising sounds like the things that we hear about globally. You know, when other countries have something going on and there are protests happening, they give it beautiful words like uprising. It sounds strong. It sounds defiant.
Riot, it
sounds purposeful, man.
Yeah,
right. So the Baltimore uprising. I'll tell you, so it's freestyle. Wednesday, and there are some things that has pissed me off, but nothing more than black people, passive aggressive black people, black people that value the structure of buildings over human lives, black people that are more concerned with cars and buildings burning than black men dying. These posts about why you burning your own stuff, you won't have anywhere to shop tomorrow, those kind of things have collectively pissed me off. And I'm like, how can you sit in your suburbia, America, whatever it is, whatever place in America you think you've arrived in your life, and pass judgment on people that are fed up?
Right.
How about you make some personal sacrifice and get your ass up and do something? And if you don't know what to do, how about you shut up?
Mm.
Since you can't do anything, why don't you not say anything? Because I don't have any patience, Took, for people that are sitting back talking about, well, that's just a shame. They're embarrassing us. Embarrassing? Who? Sit down. You're embarrassing me. Shut up. I don't want to hear it. I do not want to hear it.
Wow. And where did you hear? I mean, please don't tell me you heard these sentiments over television airwaves.
I've heard these sentiments from celebrities and athletes and everyday people on social media and Twitter and Facebook. You hear, wait a minute, did you see the Ray Lewis video?
I heard a segment on Sports Talk with Ray Lewis.
Just stop. I don't want to, just stop. Stuff like that does nothing for me. What I'm going to need Ray Ray to do is go out on the streets of Baltimore.
Right.
Not sit in the comfort of your home and make a video where you yelling at your video phone. That I'm not impressed. Young people, go home. I'm not, you know.
Yeah, because he does have the influence in the community.
Right.
At least part-time resident of the D.C. area, I do, in my short time there, realize the impact of influence that Ray Lewis has in that community.
Right.
You know, and that is in the D.C. Baltimore area is a predominantly red skin country. And Ray Lewis shows up and moves a finger. You remember that scene in Malcolm X when he turned his finger and the whole crowd moved?
I know.
So, right. So, and you remember the comment from the officer that said, one man, that's too much power for one man
power
to have?
Power for one man, yeah.
That is how did the authority of the city of Baltimore feel about Ray Lewis, to be honest with you. And because they still hold a sentiment, you know, of course, I'm not going to tell all of that, but if there are any listeners out there who are listening from Baltimore or the Maryland area, and I did send you invites as well, I try to do that every week, please comment, call in and comment on what it is, verify what it is that I'm saying, is that the local police department are still uneasy because they still feel he's guilty about that murder. So, you know, they really haven't accepted Ray Lewis as this hero. Now, of the people, you know, whatever the Ray Lewis function that it is, when he shows up, the people show up and they show out. So with you saying that, it didn't really trigger with me that he's setting up his phone and making a video. Yeah, brother, come out and show your face and exercise the power that we know you have. When it's in a monetary position, you always show up. And you're always there, and you talk about being there when it counts. This is when it counts.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed from that sense, and you even got me fired up now about something I didn't even think about from his position. I just heard his message, and I thought it was disturbing.
Right.
I really did, because it's like piggybacking on, you know, what's bothering me about this whole thing, you know, with the media, especially they're pushing, you know, you know, referring to our young men as thugs. There's, you know, one, you know, you want to thuggery is not, I mean, if you truly knew the definition of what it is that you're using, thuggery wouldn't pertain to this particular instance. And then, as you said, riots has a connotation of something being negative and being of useless position. So uprising would be more appropriate, and I'm glad we used that for tonight. But what's bothering me more than anything, Tiki, is when folks start talking about why is it that they're burning down their own community. Now, as a young man that grew up in housing projects most of my life, let me tell you something about people that live in impoverished neighborhoods. You can't burn up anything that's, you know, you can't claim that I'm burning up my neighborhood when I don't own any of it. You're talking about people who come into my neighborhood and make money off my people.
Right.
Their businesses are being burned up. And please don't behoove yourself and not believe after it's burned down, thought folks in the other county that's lined up and ready to come in and make more money off my people again. So it will be rebuilt. Your stores and your manufacturing and your money-making properties will be replenished. And you will come back in and overcharge and overtax my people for products that are extremely higher than if we were able to transport over two counties over and get a much cheaper price in supermarkets and gas stations in your neighborhoods. So please save that when you talk about us burning up our own things, because Leroy and them don't own none of them stores.
Right. That is true.
So, you know, now looting, I don't approve of that, you know.
I don't either.
That's a whole different issue. But please stop with the analogy that we are burning up our own stuff because we don't own any of it. We're just paying into it.
No, we don't. We don't own anything. But you know what I want to do tonight, since this is Freestyle Wednesday? If our callers want to call in and be a part of the conversation instead of taking comments like we normally do, the people that call in, we're going to have them on, and we're going to, tonight, for tonight's show, we're going to have the conversation. You know what I'm saying? We're going to talk about what's happening. We're going to talk about what we need to be talking about. And I think we just got pinged that we have a caller online. So, Courtney, are you there?
I am here.
Hi. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Love your show.
Thank you.
So first of all, I have several points I want to touch on. But first, you know, maybe a little off topic, but I just want to say, for the record, being a Chicago boy.
Courtney.
Yes.
Freestyle Wednesday. There's nothing off topic. Go ahead.
Okay. So, being a Chicago boy, your boy Bill Lambert, he would have made a great Baltimore policeman. I just want to put that out there real quick.
What? Look, okay, I'm going to just let that pass.
Okay.
I'm going to just let that pass.
All right, so secondly, while I agree, sometimes you got to burn stuff up. You know, uprising is, it's a nice word, but the actions have to be about what you talk about or what you want to express. So instead of burning down the corner where, you know, you go every day to buy milk, eggs, why don't you go down to City Hall or, you know, go down to the pub where all the policemen go hang out after they shot and killed, you know, numerous black men and celebrated, burn that down, you know, as well. You know, you can... Granted, we don't own, black people don't own 99% of the establishments in our neighborhood, but burn some things down that will actually affect the oppressor, as well.
Right.
That's my thing. And you alluded to that, and you actually altered my thinking on that as well. Yeah, you burn things down. You know, make a statement. You know, let them know you're not having it, but make it a little more personal, a little more sensitive, if I may.
You know,
yeah.
Yesterday, was it yesterday that our president did that? It was yesterday. And in talking and coming out, making a statement about what had happened in Baltimore the day before with the burning of the vehicles, the policemen that were injured, and the buildings that were burned, President Obama said, and I quote, "Those that are responsible for the destruction in Baltimore need to be treated as criminals." And I get that. I totally understand that how we receive information is directly related to how we feel when we get it, you know?
Right.
So I'm already, when he said it, I was already in a bad place, you know, emotionally, because I'm watching this stuff and it's looping continuously on TV, which I know better. And I am getting more and more pissed. And so for him to come out and say those that are responsible should be treated as criminals, I lost my mind. And I'm talking to the TV, and I'm going to President Obama, what the fuck you mean, treated as criminals? You know, this is me, you know, I'm talking to the TV, and because I need to understand, you know, I'm tears are coming. I'm up in here by myself. I'm talking to the TV. Like, what the hell is going on? Because you're talking about criminalizing people that are not even visible. You're talking about criminalizing people that are criminals or have a certain perception on their lives from the day they're born. Just being born with a brown hue in this country puts you in a category that ensures that it's probable that you will encounter some degree of oppression and discrimination in your lifetime. So I'm like, should be treated as criminals. Do you really think that the people out there in this uprising care about that? Do you think that they give a damn about you treating them as criminals? This young man saw the cops and ran, and the cops chased him, and he died. And there is no story about his death that you can Google to find out what his charges would be. So he didn't commit a fucking crime. He just died. He was born black and he died the same way. There is no crime. Can somebody please tell me what crime he committed? He did what most black men in inner cities do when they see the police. They go the other damn way. So he ran.
I mean, it just goes to, I mean, you can break it down to the laws of nature. I mean, there's a stimulant and there's a reaction. I mean, granted, I'm not the one to focus on what the news, what the media has to say all the time. But, you know, I try to keep myself abreast of what's going on here and there. See, there's a cause and effect. All I'm seeing, and I know more about the effect than I know about the cause. And that's social media, but again, even come from the highest level, from President Obama, he never mentioned that. He mentions what's going on. Fox, you know, reports what's going on, but let me know why it's going on. You know, what is the cause of all of this? I mean, just because, I mean, in all honesty, this has been going on for thousands of years. You know, it just so happens, you know, everybody's got a you know, a camera on their phone now, and now everyone's being made aware of it. But this has been going on for thousands and thousands of years, hundreds of years. So, I mean, what's the cause? I mean, we can talk about the effect all we want, and we can treat the symptoms of a sickness or a disease, but if we don't know what the disease is or we don't acknowledge the disease, it's going to keep going on. This is true.
Courtney, for those thousands of years that this has been going on, and it took for, you know, a good friend of mine who happens to be white to share it with me, for those thousands of years, y'all just been lying. That never happens. That one sort of unified story that y'all got to come along to make the police look bad. That's right. Never happened before. But no, don't lie, because they truly believe that. Until
right.
we have this technology to show that it happens, now they're in a state of shock.
Because the Rodney King thing was viewed as an isolated incident. What the black community understood was there were a lot of Rodney Kings getting their ass beat. And somebody happened to capture that one incident. But for the masses, but for the masses, that was, that was just this one horrible thing that happened, and it shouldn't have happened, and they should have been punished. No. Black people are getting their ass kicked all the time like that. That one just happened to be caught on tape.
Hey, that was just another day in the neighborhood.
Right,
exactly.
And see, Courtney, you hit home with me when you said a natural instinct. Because if you've grown up in that neighborhood like I did, or just, you know, from that sense of growing up as a young black man, you talk about instinct. What we learned as young black men, and it's a sad scenario, was that if one of us got up and started running, you run with him, and you find out why we're running later.
Exactly.
Am I right or am I wrong?
Exactly.
You're right.
You're going to cover all your bases. You're not going to leave anything up to chance. After, you know, the coast is clear, they will discuss what was really going on. But you're not taking any chances because of the natural instinct that we all have been bred into, and it's been ingrained in our minds and our social being. It's self-preservation first and foremost before anything else. Right or wrong, illegal or legal, self-preservation comes before anything else.
Right.
See what's so disappointing for me, and why it's disheartening. Obama, I talked about before, about the media's choice of words. I'm very disappointed that Mr. Brother Man President, in your choice of words, how quickly do we forget? Tiki, you always gave me a hard time when I was a very proud black Republican, but that's a whole nother show. We'll talk about that another time. But at the point when I was, let me see if y'all can help me out. When President Obama bailed out the financial institutions, can you guess what word or what title they wanted to, or what they charged he should be charged with, what Congress said he should be charged at? A criminal. Now, being that he took that approach, and we've seen his plan to come to fruition, and it has been a good thing for this country, nonetheless, at the time, you know, when it was fresh and you were freshly on a mission to prove you are all people's president, they stood and said, you should be charged as a criminal for what you've done. And for you to sign on your own people and use those choice of words, very disappointing. Huh.
It is disappointing, and you know, I believe in being fair and balanced. He gave a talk, an interview from the Rose Garden, and where he was basically telling the media, and I'm paraphrasing, to stop being naive, that the things that we're seeing happening and play out in Baltimore aren't new, and that is why, you know, we're seeing this festering, you know. But in my opinion, what he failed to do was bridge the gap of that message to where he was trying to get to in appearing to be unbiased with the whole they should be treated as criminals. Those responsible should be treated as criminals. For me, that was a failure. I understood his attempt when, you know, he was saying basically what we're saying here is that this isn't brand new. This isn't just start happening in these communities. You know, black men, black people have been suffering in this way, these kinds of injustices for years now, for decades. And to come off, if, you know, the media to throw questions at him, like, why do you think this is happening? Like, really? He's like, only thing that has changed is the inflection of cameras, phones, multimedia devices that people use now to capture these things. So, like, the woman with the federal marshal took her camera, took her phone and stomped on it, and somebody else was filming him do that. You know, so it was bad, but it was funny, right?
Right.
So, yeah. And I was thinking about him, to your point, when he was, you know, they should be treated as criminals. The whole time you've been president, not only have they been treating you like a criminal, they've been treating you like they think you're a nigger. Not
right.
A nigger, a nigger, you know?
Right.
So he has been far and away the most disrespected president
right.
in the history right. of this country. But he has to know, I get it that he has the kind of self-confidence that he don't give a damn and he's going to do what he's going to do.
Right.
But he should also recognize that it was his mother's heritage that got him elected. But
right.
it's his father's heritage that's getting him mistreated. You know
right.
what I'm saying? It's your blackness that's getting you the uncooperation from Congress, from your peers, just the disrespect.
And that's the main reason.
You,
and that's the main reason
that
why
he should have been slow to use criminal. Yeah, yeah, I get it.
Right.
Absolutely.
I think he shouldn't toe the line as much as he tries to. That's what I think. I think either you're with right or you're with wrong. I think you try to not alienate both sides, but in doing that, you really don't have a stance. You're just a figurehead.
Right.
You're just speaking generalities. You're not
right.
standing
yeah.
for anything. You're just spitting out common knowledge that everyone knows, but no one knows who you're with or what you are for. That's the
what
problem.
You're for.
And,
right.
and in doing so, no one's really feeling him 100%.
No.
But here's the thing, guys, and I think we need to not do. There has been this idea, right, in the black community that Obama should, like, quote unquote, come out more for us. President Obama is not a civil rights leader. He is the leader of the free world. And so whatever actions
he
take or don't take.
He was senator.
No, that was before. As president, he can't be president.
He was in infant role Sanders.
No, he cannot be Rose Sanders in the White House.
He was an infant Rose Sanders.
No, he can't be, though. He can't. Not in his – I'm not talking about what he was. What he is today is the leader of the free world. So we should not have an expectation of him about any demographic in this country that we would not have in any other president. And that is where I am willing to be fair and unbiased in that in the black community, because he is black, because we have an expectation that he should be able to identify with the plight of what it's like to be black in America, we still need to step back from expecting him to be the modern-day Martin Luther King Jr. because he's not.
Why can't we expect that?
No, because you can't be that and be president, because to be that means that you have an obvious agenda that is specific to black people. But with all, like we were talking about on last week's show, if all the black people in the world got together, you would not elect him. I mean, in the United States got together, you could elect him as president. There's just not enough people for that. So blacks in America didn't get him elected alone. So he is the people's president. He is the leader of the free world. End of story, period.
So he has to suppress
half
of his beliefs in order to
No, not at all.
But see, this is the part, guys, where, and Courtney, I hear what you're saying. Tiki, I definitely hear and I get it. What you're talking about in that presidency, in that seat as the president of the United States, you have to keep everything spinning. You got to keep things juggling. This is where I'm confused. I'm confused right here. Is because there are no more elections for you to win. There are no more elections for you to run for. You're already in. You don't have to worry about the brother. They've been trying to impeach you from day one. Okay? So all you have left is what's left on this year and a half, or that's left on this term. And sadly enough, I think Bill Maher said it best. Now, Bill Maher is one of the greatest activists I've ever seen on television for black people. But he wrote a personal check and showed off, he wrote and donated $1 million to Obama's original run. And he made it very clear. I gave my $1 million, and I just want to know, when is President Shaft going to show up that I voted for?
Right.
He did say that.
I mean, man.
You can't do that, dog. And I, you know, I get it. We can't. I cannot agree with that because. Because when he does things like, you know, sign executive orders and basically tell Congress to go to hell, you know, I be having my get a moments. I do. But I know that he does that because it's whatever he's signing into executive order is something he perceives as being best for the greater good, right? And that still has no foundation in him coming out being a civil rights leader. Now, if he chooses to be a civil rights leader at the end of his term because he can no longer be president, then great, beautiful, wonderful, awesome. He's probably not going to do that, but if he did, that'll be, you know. But I understand why he can't do that while he's in office.
So as a leader of the free world, he cannot be a civil rights leader. So how do you fight and protect civil rights?
You cannot come out and be the leader of a specific group.
Civil rights doesn't just affect black folks. They affect, you know, homosexuals. They affect veterans. They affect the disabled. Those are just civil rights.
He's a leader for human rights.
Well, he's not coming out like Huey Newton. I mean, but right is right and wrong is wrong.
If you don't get that from the highest of the hierarchy,
where are you going to get it from?
He cannot leave Pennsylvania Avenue and go to Baltimore or Michigan Avenue and start throwing rocks or calling for peaceful protests. He cannot do that, Courtney. I don't care how
he can let us know if he thinks it's fucked up or not. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Can I turn on the radio?
No, yeah. Be with us.
Okay. I got a little bit. My bad. But he can express himself as the leader of our free world that he does not agree with this or that. He can't say
he did.
I'm not going to say I agree with this or I'm not going to agree with that, but I do think this. I mean, come on, President.
Like, no, listen, if you had listened to his press conference in the Rose Garden yesterday, he was emphatic about that. You know, he chastised what's happening in inner cities. He called for change. He is advocating that. He called it out. He didn't leave any gray area on that. My problem was very specific from going there to calling that out to trying to be middle of the road by saying those who are responsible for the destruction in Baltimore should be treated as criminals. That language is what was the problem for me.
Right.
That particular language, that right there. But make no mistake, if you listen to the totality of what he had to say, there's no way you can disagree with his position or even call it vanilla. He was very firm, very straight up about the fact that mainstream America is on some bullshit.
Right. And I understand that we as a people, we're always going to want Obama to do more. Okay?
Right.
That's never going to cease. We have to understand that position, the position of presidency, if we stop for a moment and look and realize we're on the same side as the white supremacists were with the 43 presidents that preceded him that wanted them to do more about all you trouble calls and Negroes that's out there. But I'm pretty sure Lyndon Johnson wanted to do more, you know.
Right.
But nonetheless, in that seat of the presidency, I just can't come out and say, we as white people need to do more. You know, I need to go and stand with you and do more in this area. So in that position of presidency, we got to understand. You know, I mean, I've heard a political leader say once before, and I really should know who it is and since I'm quoting him. But he stated that one of the powerless people of their own country is the leader of the free world.
Right. Exactly.
And that's the presidency of the United States. You have more power outside this country than you do inside this country. So
right.
We already knew as the president, anything he going to have to do, he got to do the waffle dance. Every president done did that. You're not going to sit up here and tell me that whether it be Reagan or Bush number one or whoever, whenever they, you know, instituted these black initiatives or whatever, they were doing it wholeheartedly. I don't believe that, you know. So,
right.
You know, but nonetheless, those are things that they had to do in that position. And I'm sure there was not only folks on the back door, but David Duke and all the Grand Wizards and his people on that side were pressuring them and saying, you're in lover or whatever the case is, you the president, you can just do it, right? So,
right.
I mean, I get that. But, you know, it's part of being the presidency. My thing is I want to see what he's going to do with his influential power when he's out of the position of the presidency, because his legacy goes on a lot further than outside of this office.
Gentlemen.
And that's what I think, and that's what I'm sorry, Tiki, interrupt?
Yeah.
Go ahead. So
I was about to say, we have a couple of people that are about to join this discussion,
mm-hmm.
And because there's very little left in this discussion we're going to talk about, because I have another thought that I want to introduce. So I think we have Sean and Mike on.
Yeah, how you doing?
All right, Sean and Mike.
Hey, what's going on?
Hi.
Who is Mike?
So, Sean, who is this, Mike?
Yeah, it's Mike.
Hi, Mike. What's your comment? What's your thought?
No, I was listening to the comment. I was listening to you guys, man, and basically what I understood is that we're talking about President Obama and what he can and cannot do for black folks while he's in office. And we're talking in a sense like he cannot do things for us. We're talking in a sense like like our issues don't really matter. Black folks' issues don't matter because he's black. I mean, to me, this is the time that he can't do something for black folks. We're not looking for nothing other than just to be treated equally. Now, if you think about it, he did something for everybody except the black folks. Why? Because we feel like he shouldn't do anything for us because we're black. And he's America's president. He's a free world leader. Okay, what about gay marriages? He did something for the gays. What about immigration? Right. He's working on immigration for the illegal immigrants in this country. So you telling me, and what I'm listening to, I mean, you're saying that, oh, because we black, he can't do anything for us because it would seem like he's looking out for the black people. Now, we all, if I can agree, we all are one nation, one group of people. We all have specific issues and needs, but since we black, he cannot do anything for us because it's going to seem like he's looking out for the black folks. See, man, that kind of mindset and that kind of condition, and to be honest with you, he haven't done anything for black folks. He haven't. Now, don't get me wrong, I still like Obama, and I like to see him have some nuts and say, you know what, we got to do something about what's going on in the black communities. But he hasn't.
I'm sorry, Mike, that you misunderstood everything that I was saying. I know that people, I hope that anybody listening to what we've been saying tonight didn't come away with what you're coming away with, that my position is that the president shouldn't do anything for black people because he's black. That's not what I said. And I keep up. That is exactly not what I said.
No, you did say that.
He is not the civil rights leader. He is not the leader. He is not the modern day Dr. Martin Luther King. That is a different role. What I am saying,
Martin Luther King,
Mike, what I am saying is that in any action that he takes as the elected official to the office of the President of the United States has to be specifically for the greater good for all Americans. Now, he has done plenty for black people, and I'm going to need you to do some research on Google or wherever you can go to find out.
No.
He is the president, the only president, that are releasing black men from these mandatory minimum in prison he's not sending them to halfway houses. He's letting them go home. They shouldn't have never been. He didn't put them there. They shouldn't have never been there. And I think it's a great thing that he's doing to stymie the school to prison pipeline, because you know who's directly affected by that? Black people. Black men.
We know that.
Say that he's done nothing for black people is woefully, woefully wrong.
Tiki.
Now, let me say this. What else has he done?
Okay. Well, we don't have that much time in the show to go pinpoint by pinpoint. I think what we have to do is be fair, Mike, in that there is a large space between done nothing and done something. And as I talked about before, is that no matter what we come up with, as a people, we always going to feel he could have done more, you know. And the point is that when you're in the position, he's not going to be able to do everything that we out and aspire for him to do. So he's going to have to juggle those points. We're not saying that. But I don't think we ever said that that he's done nothing for black people.
Neither one of you can interject because Sean hasn't said his thought. We'll circle back around. So just hold on a second, guys. We'll come back, I promise. Sean?
Well, I kind of feel like I'm getting off topic now. One of the first things I wanted to address was the whole thing that was brought up about 15 minutes ago about the nature of survival instinct that we as black people have.
Right.
You know, he saw a cop and he ran. And that kind of puts me in the thought process or it makes me think that it's interesting how your choice of words, you called it a survival instinct. It's a natural phenomenon for you to want to preserve yourself, which
we all have.
I picture that as let's liken it to National Geographic. We're like it's a hunter and a lion.
Right.
A lion is in its own domain is a top predator. However, you throw a hunter in this situation, i.e. police, i.e., you know, school to prison pipelines, all of the other stuff that's arrayed against our community, I would have to say, that top predator, that top person now becomes prey. And there's
now
no African proverb that says, until the lion has a historian, the hunter will always be the hero.
Right. Say it. Say it, Sean. Say it.
So I think the problem is one of our problems is we have the reach when it comes to telling our story that the hunter does.
Right.
So you're starting to see things like News One and you know Roland Martin and Ed Gordon and Tavis Smiley and all of those wonderful people and it's interesting because now. To another point that you made earlier like when you were talking about Rodney King, how it was seen as an isolated incident, and Tavis Smiley asked Bill O'Reilly one thing to shut him down, and I almost ran off my car off the road, and he asked him, how many isolated incidents does it take to make a habit?
Right.
So, and to your point about President Obama, as far as this particular issue, now I am with you to the point to some extent that he cannot appear.
Appear, yes.
To show favoritism from one, even though it could be argued that every president preceding him looked out for his own. It can be argued that.
Right.
But
it can.
In this particular issue, since statistics show white people face this exact same issue, they're killed at a rate at twice the rate as black people. It could be, you know, there's an even political spin on this to say, hey, we need to save our children, not our black children, but our children. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So in this particular issue, I'm not going to say for our community at large, but in this particular issue, I do feel like that there was something, that there was a way that it could have been and very well still may be addressed from his level.
Definitely.
And I think it is being, from what I'm listening to, and I'm watching like a hawk. It is being.
And, Sean, I appreciate, I respect everything you said. I respect the comments. They're intelligent. I agree. Couple points.
Is this Mike or Courtney?
That's Courtney.
Courtney.
Okay, go ahead, Courtney.
So when you speak of reach, I mean, we have supposedly the ear or our best interest of the leader of the free world. So that should be reach enough.
Well, here's second what I mean. Let me clarify what I mean when I say
reach. Let me do my second. So second of all, you speak of appearances. How did it appear? What did it appear to be when Obama agreed to bail out the Wall Street banks who us as black folks, you know, we didn't really benefit from that. It benefited from, what's the new word, the quote-unquote job creators now. So that's the appearance that we got as black folks from our reach of the leader of the free world, which happens to be a black man from Chicago, one of the poorest, most violent cities in America. So that's kind of mind-boggling.
That bailout was about the economy and everybody.
It was about the economy. True, but I mean, who did it? Again, we're talking about appearance, right?
Benefit.
The second point was appearance.
So let me address the first part if I could.
So the American, the world, not only the American economy. That's not fair. The global economy benefited from that bailout. We're talking Greece. We're talking Europe. The euro in its entirety.
Right.
So that bailout had he is the leader of the free world, and that bailout had to do with being the leader of the free world. That saves the world's economy. Because
and I digress, because we fixed the effect. We fixed the symptom of what the problem is. So we didn't address the problem. We addressed how to fix the problem that still exists.
That is where I disagree with you, and here is why. When he got into office, that was the patch that was required, but he has spent the rest of his term addressing the problem. And
Agreed.
What's happening on Wall Street and what's happening in the economy right now is a direct result of addressing the problem. He's addressing the fix. His administration has been addressing the problem, not just the symptoms. So he had to start somewhere. He had to stop the bleeding to see where the bone was broken. You have to go through one to get to the other. He had to stop the bleeding.
I have one question.
Okay.
What's your question, Mike?
My question is, okay, when he's up, his tenure is done. Do you think he's going to do anything for black people?
Is he going to do what now? I'm sorry.
Do you think he's going to do anything for black people once he's out of office?
What is it that you would like him to see?
The question is, do you think he's going to be that civil rights leader once he's out of office?
I hope not.
Negative.
Yeah?
I hope not.
Obama's going to make more.
No.
Obama going to be the person that he is right now when he's out of office. He's going to make a bunch of money. He's going to exploit black people. But don't get me wrong now. I'm just going to leave it like that.
What is it specifically, Mike, that you want Obama to do?
I don't need him to do anything for me.
What do you think he should be doing for black people?
I don't have the answers right now, but I know what he haven't done.
Okay, well, Mike, let me give you an answer that kind of ties in with all of it and why we, you know, he did the bailout and all of that. And I heard, I think it was Courtney that talked about, or somebody talked about the symptoms. And okay,
right.
This country, and let's just talk about our people and how it affects our people. And Reagan had an interesting term. You know, it was in a negative way, it was called trickle-down economics.
Right.
So let's look at the trickle-down economics and what Obama ended up doing for us everyday people. Bro, if we go on this show, we talk about what we don't talk about. Okay, let's talk about what we don't talk about. Our black asses wouldn't be in those instances if we wouldn't sit there and let these predatory lenders convince us that we was worthy of $500,000 houses with no job. Okay?
Right.
So what Obama did in the bailout was when they came along and say, it's time to pay, if the balloon payment is here, now your payment go from that $1,000 that we had you, that unrealistic, now your monthly mortgage is $4,500 a month. And what Obama did with the bailout was allow black folks and everyday people to walk away from them damn mortgages without penalty. That helped us, period. What we have to do is if we're gonna cure the symptom is for our people to stop coming along and for you to go back to your neighborhood and show that you now a homeowner and you done got an Escalade and you ain't got no job. That's not realistic. Let's clear the symptom and let's get down to, you know, trickle-down economics and realize that we have to build and work something for ourselves. And it was truly unrealistic. And what did we expect when they came along and told us they was going to give us something for nothing? Could we just realize for 1 second that if McCain was the president, how would our people who were stuck in their mortgages, how they would be paying for that right now? The resolution is to lock your ass up.
Thank you.
Period.
Credit card reform. We were the ones with the jacked up credit. We are still the ones with the jacked up credit, and they had us in a loop. Credit card reform got our black asses out of that sleep.
So when we talk about what Obama has done that affects us,
period.
Right.
You need to look at, you know, not just within yourself, but with your homeboy. Ask your homeboy who, you know, owned a house just recently last year, and where'd that go? Why he in an apartment right now? You know what I'm
right.
saying? And why? And that has happened to this country on a national scale. And as a whole, that's how that has affected everyday people. Now, there
right.
is no way for a president or anyone in Congress to write out a personal check to all of us individually. That's not going to
happen. I hear all that you're saying, but in essence, what I'm hearing right now is like nobody has bad credit but black folks. Is that true?
No, that's not what anybody is saying.
Hey, but we as people in general do have bad credit. Let's not lose that. We're not saying only black. This, we got to get over that. We're not saying we're being picked on, but if we're going to help, if I'm going to help my own people and I got to stand and say, I got to be realistic and honest with you, and as a percentage, we don't have good credit, period. That's why when we find somebody with good credit, we go try to hop on it.
And
I hear what you're saying, but I
can't hardly hear you. I sound muffled, man. And maybe a lot of it is because I'm trying to do two or three things at one time.
Let me interject.
This is Tiki's Cafe Mahogany. Hold on.
Oh. How you doing, Tiki?
I'm just trying to hear, baby. That's all I'm trying to do. I'm trying to
talk to Sean. He's saying something that I want to hear. So hold on one second. Sean, what are you saying?
Someone mentioned addressing the symptoms.
Good.
And
Courtney,
let's address the major symptoms. We as a community have a habit, and it's a bad habit, of waiting and looking for a Messiah. I don't know about the rest of you, but I got a Savior.
Right.
I'm not expecting Obama to come out their White House and save me. What we need to do is we need to, as a community, come together and work to solve our own issues like every other community has done. The homosexual community does not go to another community for help, for financing, for addressing their issues. They only go to another community where their community has been attacked. The Jewish community does not go to any other community for any other help. And if they want food, they go down the street. If they want money, they own the banks. They want music, they own the labels, they own the movies.
You know what you're saying, right?
They own. Courtney, this is what he's saying. We don't have to own nothing. Let me bless you.
Yeah, they owned it. But guess what? We did too. We came out of slavery owning businesses. We came out of the 60s. So what is our excuse now? Now, please understand, we don't have it easy. We don't have, you know, this is not an easy road that we're trotting right now. This is not an easy road that we're trotting right now. But please understand, we have it a hell of a lot better than our grandparents did.
Yes, we did.
As bad off as we have it now, I don't know anybody that has had a Molotov cocktail thrown through their windshield. I don't know anybody that has had Ku Klux Klan burning crosses in their front yard. I don't know. Let me bless you. My mom, I don't know any of us that had to have the National Guard escort us to school.
So some of this stuff we need
to stop looking for from the outside for help on and start doing it ourselves. Why can't four or five of us in the neighborhood come together and start our own grocery store instead of going to Kroger's and Walmart? Why can't four or five of us open up a bank?
Why?
But here's the question. How do we stimulate that initiative to do that?
It's not
with a pacifier from Obama saying, I'm going to pay all your stuff off. And at the same time, you know, get all these bankers into the black for the next 3, 4, 5 quarters. It's not that, although, you know, it's appreciated, I'm sure. But it's not that. You got to hold people's feet to the fire. You got to force them to adapt.
Sean?
Well, this is Courtney.
Yes.
Courtney. All right, I'm going to leave on this note, man. I'm just asking this one question. And I agree with you 100%, brother. Trust me, I do. I definitely agree with you, man. I'm not waiting on Obama. I'm not waiting on nobody. You know what I do? I go and make things happen myself. Now, unify as a whole, we got to get to that point, man. We got so many millionaires and billionaires as a black community, but we can't come together for shit. I understand that.
I agree. But I'm not even talking about. I'm not. I think us waiting on the millionaires and the billionaires to come and help us again is still
the
issue of us waiting on somebody to come and help. But
we
got about four or five people.
Courtney,
what's up, to
Courtney?
Do you know that? You ain't got to wait on no millionaires, but Courtney, if you got to, because you and Mike, both of y'all passion is it got me excited. The point, if we could capture that and bottle that passion that you two have, can you imagine what three of y'all could do with good credit?
Hey, bro, check this out. It's going to be people like us change this country, man. It's going to be people like us. It's going to be people like us who's with the grassroots people. Because we can't wait on the millionaires. I understand that. We can't wait on President
Obama.
It's not coming. I understand
that. Can I give you just to give you a little example of what to think about? Say you got four families in a in an apartment complex, right? Three of those families have children that are in daycare or in after school care. That's not uncommon, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't instead of three of those families taking $150 a week or whatever the fee, $200 a week or whatever the fee is, to a daycare? Why can't you get a neighbor, get to know your neighbor, the person that you walk past every day and mean mug and don't see, and, hey, would you watch my kid for $50 a week? Would you watch my kid for and come together as something small before we get to the big? When I grew up, there was one woman that watched.
It makes perfect sense, Sean. Trust me. I'm with you. It makes perfect sense. But black people have this thing called pride and ego where they think that if they ask a member of their own community, their own race, to do something for them, a service, you know, for a fair amount of pay, they think for some reason that's making them look something less than what they want everyone to appear that they are.
Right.
So Courtney, you're basically making Sean's point for him in the fact that in the black community we are our own enemies.
Right, we are.
We all know
it doesn't help.
Because
doesn't
that scenario that Sean just gave, and what Sean gave, it was very eloquent in the sense that, and that's us battling our own afflictions, is that if we paying $150 to a babysitter and we get somebody and know our own neighbor with the $50, you know what? That's the problem. We see that other $100, and where does that go? And now we're battling our afflictions because one thing is true about black folks, and you can dispute it all you want. Y'all can be mad at me if you want to. But we always go do three things. We always go look good, smell good, and drive good, period.
Yep.
Wonder about where did that other $100, you know what I'm saying? We intend and we'll start out to do it the right way, but all of a sudden what we talk about the symptoms. Let's get to the root of it. The root of it is that leftover money ain't no entertainment fund. That's investment.
Right.
Take time
but
to invest
that's
in yourself.
Symptom. Right.
Period.
But that's the symptom. The root of it is lack of education.
It takes discipline and sacrifice, and it starts with, just like you said, Sean, education. They have to be educated enough to know.
I'm a believer that you can do better, but if you don't do better, it don't count.
Right. You can talk about it, but if you're not being about it, it's pointless.
And if you ever want to learn how to lose weight, ask a fat person. They know how to do it. They just don't do it.
Hey, I'm taking personal offense to that.
Hey, I'm saying, I'm one of them, too. I'm over here. I'm calorically challenged with you.
Hey, let our sisters eat, man. I'm telling you, I love cooking.
There you go. Say that, brother. Say that.
Here's the thing, and because we're having a circular conversation, and it's a good one. The conversation needs to be had, and it needs to start somewhere. And thank you, gentlemen, for being a few good men. I always enjoy being in the company of a few good men. here's my concern. So I put on the show's page tonight, this was Freestyle Wednesday, and there were going to be a range of things that we're going to talk about. And on our page in the cafe, I posted about the under and unrepresented. And what that is for me, and what is hugely important in any movement, particularly having to do with civil rights, movements have historically started with young people doing what something similar to what we organizing and doing something similar to what we're seeing in Baltimore, Ferguson, and New York, and other places, and women, particularly black women. Their outcry is usually and normally louder than anybody's. But what I am noticing is the absolute absence of any reference made to the black women, unarmed black women in this country that are losing their lives in similar manner as black men. But that is a conversation that no one is willing to have. It's almost like no one really cares. If you think that the plight of the black man is rough in this country, we know, I can start with the Trayvon Martin and run down the names of black men that have senselessly lost their lives, but nobody can tell you, nobody can run off the names of the black women that are not only losing their lives, but no one is raising their voice to say who's responsible for her death. So when you go about your way after tonight's show and forward, think about that and think about how, as black men and women, that we aren't able to see ourselves in the conversation, in the national conversation. I was asked recently, how do we get black people in inner cities and communities involved in the national conversation? How do we get them to vote? How do we get them to do this and to do that? First, we got to get them to see themselves. We got to get them to see them. We have to be perceived as having a seat at the table. And black men and women don't. We simply do not have a seat. I cannot go to those in the uprising in Baltimore and say, you know, you need to get out and vote, you need to do this, you need to do that, when they don't think that anything that they can contribute in that matter even counts, that anybody even cares about the fact that they would vote. So for me, guys, gentlemen, when we have these conversations going forward, and we will continue to talk about this, I want us to have a consciousness that not only are our black men losing their lives, but our black women are losing their lives, and it's like a collective, I don't care. No one is even paying attention, not even our own men and women in our communities. And that is a true tragedy. Truly a tragedy.
No, that's not your final thought for what Jerry Springer show.
What?
But I feel you, T.G. No, no pun intended. I feel you. I feel you. Right.
You better. But, you know, we didn't get to talk about, you know, we have about 15 minutes in the show, and we didn't get to talk about my other true passion, and I kind of want to get your opinion on this, men, on this gentleman. And that is, what is it now? The Pistons? Did you say something about? Whatever. Welfare and this perception from working middle class Americans that their dollars are going to support people on welfare. I'm going to need people to stop buying into that notion and to stop having these negative attitudes and thought processes about welfare recipients. The public school system is welfare. If you have a child going to public school, your ass is on welfare. So cut it out. And this whole thing about moving to a system where, you know, people on welfare shouldn't be able to buy steak and seafood, that's protein.
Yeah, I think it's more ridiculous that they can buy McDonald's now.
I don't. I'm glad they can buy McDonald's. I want you to be able to buy anything you want to buy if you're hungry.
The issue with welfare is way bigger than that. You know that. I know. I hear what you're saying, but it's more or less. It's more or less geared toward like people being on that shit for like 10 years. You know, like, and then you got parents teaching their kids how to use the system. That's the issue with welfare right there. It's like there's no motivation to get off.
I don't think that's the issue.
Here's
the problem. There are 8 billion people on the planet, nearly. They're over 7, close to 8. 8 billion people on the planet, but there are not 8 billion jobs. Everybody would not be able to go to work. There's not enough jobs for everybody to work. There's not business enterprise. No, you don't. Because if you did, you would understand why welfare is always going to exist.
I'm not saying it's not going to exist. I'm talking about generational curse of generational people being taught to be, like, not even go get a job. It's like, hey, why go get a job when you can do this? That's what
and
I'm talking
people,
about.
And what generation of people is it that have learned that?
Right.
Man, it's like the generation
I'm asking a sarcastic question because I have an answer. But in your opinion, what has the media perpetuated is what group of people have taught their people to be that way?
Oh, now you want to focus on the black folks, right? Yeah.
I'm not focusing on. No, what I'm saying is, see, brother, don't lose me. Stay with me now. What I'm saying is, and what Tiki is saying, is that the media wants to not only keep pushing across that agenda, but teaching immigrants and anyone else that comes in this country that it is our people that is holding up this system of welfare. And we talked about earlier that, you know, you should be insulted when you hear that because the numbers alone don't even make that possible.
Right.
Period.
Right.
We make up 11% of the population of people that's in this country. Yet we have the foundation of welfare? That's impossible.
Right.
Here's the other thing. You talk about welfare. Okay, so welfare, you know, examine, look at, analyze, search, Google, Bing, the definition of welfare. Welfare is not, what we've come to learn as a generation, welfare is a taboo term, especially to black folks.
Right.
Look at the definition of welfare. It's not giving something, I mean, in a sense it is, but it's not giving away something or, you know, it's not a derogatory term in the sense of the definition. Welfare is helping others.
Right.
That's all it is. With the culture that we have now, especially among black folks, welfare is like, okay, some people take advantage of it, some people don't. But
right.
Welfare is, okay, if, look, brother, if you don't have anything to eat today, I'm going to help pitch in so you can eat today. That's the essence of welfare. Or if you can't afford this, I'm going to give 2 cents on whatever your amount is that you need to accomplish, whatever you need to accomplish for the bare minimum to survive. I mean, welfare is not a derogatory term, but in our culture, it's perceived, especially in the black folk, in the black community, that it's a derogatory term and that it's shameful, it's undignified, it's disrespectful, and that needs to change itself. Or unless you're going to change the definition of the word, something
so
is not.
So here's the thing. My whole point, and we're about to sign off the show, and thank you all for calling. My whole point about bringing up welfare as it relates to us is that as a people, I would like for us to stop, and particularly working middle-class black Americans who are probably a paycheck or two away from being on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
What I need to happen is for us to stop perpetuating this idea that we're contributing so much to welfare recipients and they're somehow sucking us dry and living off us. Okay, if all I can have in my happiness is a lobster tail, let me have that. If I'm poor in America and the only thing I can have is something good to eat, let me buy the steak, please. Let me buy the lobster. Only 9 cents out of your taxes. 9 cents. 9 cents on average is what the average working American contributes to welfare. 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Not 90, not 99. 9 cents. And since that is all you really giving up, and you give more to corporations like Walmart in their incentives and defense spending in this country, way more, leave it be. I want to see an end to this struggle, this battle between middle class and poor. Why are you fighting? Why are we fighting each other? That's not how that should be.
I never saw that. Interesting.
Right. And I want us to stay out of them check cashing places.
Please. But that ain't the poor. That's the working Americans.
That's what I'm talking about, Tiki. It's the same working Americans that's sitting there talking about you getting a steak and this and that, and then they don't have enough sense to go open a bank account and go cash their check at the check cashing places and give them 20% of your money.
Right.
So, there's a lot of root causes that we need to fix within ourselves.
The check cashing places don't care what kind of income you have. It could be Social Security. Right. It could be welfare.
It
you
don't matter.
As long as you got incoming income from the state or either the federal government, they will gladly accept your money.
They want their 20%.
Right. Right.
I don't get it.
Right. So that's one thing before we sign off. Y'all could go ahead. Let's open some check cashing places and give people a loan. Y'all have a good day. Great having everybody in on the show this week. Tune in next week to Cafe Mahogany, where we're going to talk about again what it is that we don't talk about. Y'all be good and have a good week.
Thanks, guys.
The one. wayside. Another miserable through love company. What do you want from me in my skies? Everybody lack confidence. Everybody lack confidence. How many times my potential was anonymous? How many times the city making me promises? So I promise this.
You're listening to Team Broadcasting.